struts like John Wayne, resembles Jim Carrey, and dresses like he's visually impaired. Because he is. Insight. Insight with Mark Farrell on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hey, it's Mark. Good morning and welcome to Thursday. What feels like a very, very different Thursday after what we experienced yesterday. I don't know about you, but yesterday I was extremely angry and sad, crestfallen. I could not believe what I was seeing with my eyes. I'm sure, like you, people rushing, ramming down doors, breaking windows at the Capitol building. Never in my lifetime would I have thought of that. I mean, so many things have happened in our lives, certainly with this pandemic, that we would never, ever foresee. But just the tumultuous sea of hate, anger, and denial of the truth, I just still can't wrap my head around it. So yeah, we're going to be talking about this today because this is top of mind everywhere you go, everywhere you see. And we're going to meet Kristen Kidd. She's an incredible photographer that brings a lot to pages and more to the eye and impacts the heart on many levels and for many species. Thanks for hanging out with me. I always appreciate you checking out the Progressive Radio Network. Insight is always happening here on Thursday mornings. And yesterday, could you believe, were you in utter disbelief about the abysmal atrocities that were happening? Okay, it's one thing to get together and have a MAGA march, a million MAGA march, because obviously Trump has been fanning these flames. And I honestly believe that he feels that he won. He feels that he was part of an illegitimate and crooked, fixed, however you want to couch it, election fraud. And that's not the case. I mean, I'm no expert, but I'm just listening to the experts on both sides of the aisle in terms of security experts, congressmen, people who have officiate or basically announce the verdicts and votes as legitimate. And everyone says there is no fraudulence. So I don't understand how people can... I guess maybe if you have so much respect and love and passion for somebody, which God knows, I don't know how anybody could for Trump because he's just deplorable on many levels. Okay, but just putting that aside, could you be swayed so much by a president? And I guess we see this in other countries, other banana republics. Not that we live in a banana republic, but yesterday felt like a banana republic. It's so hard to wrap your head around that people could be swung, cajoled into believing that the election was rigged. And I was happy to see that his Twitter account was frozen for 12 hours yesterday. And I hope it's actually deleted and purged and he's blocked from Twitter. Because that's going to send a message, because people who really believe in him have to understand, just like this morning or yesterday possibly, but it's becoming more popular this morning, that former President Obama, Carter, Bush, and who else was it? Clinton said, wrote some poignant words about how yesterday was un-American, it was a travesty, and that's not how we resolve differences. In essence, that's kind of what they said. So people from all walks of life across the aisle are denouncing what took place and that the election was legitimate. I don't know what else it's going to take. Is it that we have people that are, I don't know, missing something in their life and just love the fact that they can create this fuel and falsehood that gives them excitement in their life? I don't have any idea. It's insanity. It is insanity, lunacy. So for these people to continue to believe that, okay, we can assemble in Washington, great. It's your right to assemble. March. Speak your piece. But I wonder if how many people turned around when they were getting close to the Capitol building. Once the walls were breached, windows were broken, and said, you know what? This is not a good idea. I don't think we should partake in this. I'm getting the heck out of Dodge. Okay, I came here. I like Trump. I thought he was robbed of the election. But you know what? This is not my cup of tea. This is obviously breaking the law. This is federal property. I could get arrested. I can get prosecuted. This is just not a good thing. So I hope a lot of people who were there yesterday in support of Trump, in support of the movement, and the belief that he was robbed of this election, went home last night, watched TV, and realized, wow, yeah, that went too far. It's my inalienable right to be vocal, to demonstrate, but that was too far. Someone died. And then we don't know all the circumstances. I don't, under how this one person died, this woman died. But I've seen many, many postings on social media, majority of them denouncing, of course, what happened yesterday. But it's still unfathomable what took place on so many levels. And the other thing is like preparedness. Now, it's not, well, the fact that the Capitol was not secure leads me to wonder why. I mean, I even said to my wife a week ago, okay, Tuesday is really, really important because of the runoff election in Georgia, which we'll get to. But Wednesday is obviously equally important because I'm afraid what's going to happen in D.C. And she's like, why? And she goes, oh, yeah, that's right. The march is going to happen, or the Trump rally. And so it's been talked about. It's been known about. I mean, it's gotten gargantuan momentum on social media. So why weren't they ready? Why wasn't the D.C. police or National Guard on standby? I have a hard time believing that in a moment's notice that the White House, Secret Service, can't radio for 10 helicopters to appear to tear gas a rally. I find that very, very hard to believe. In this day and age where security is so critical and vital to everyone's existence on this globe, especially around the White House, that there wouldn't be a way to boop, all right, let's get this under control. Hey, I mean, when Trump wanted to walk from the White House to the church, what, a couple of football fields at most, they had no problem tear gassing spectators, peaceful protesters. And yet they were allowed to storm the Senate. Okay, so there's a lot of holes in security there. Did someone drop the ball? Was this part of Trump putting the kibosh on not permitting them to have Secret Service or National Guard? Was he aware of plans or lack of plans? So there's a lot of information that has to come to the surface because I don't understand how this could have happened. Yes, the people could have rushed to the area, but if there was National Guard there, when you're expecting a million people or even a half a million people, and you suspect they're going to be near the state Capitol building, why wouldn't there be massive security? Massive security. It's ridiculous. It's total lack of experience. It's ignorance. I don't understand how that could happen. So would there have been more of a blank show if there were security and people stormed? I don't think people would have stormed. They would have gotten tear gassed. There would have been some, obviously, some fisticuffs that would have ensued. But I certainly don't think that someone would be sitting at Nancy Pelosi's desk with her feet up on her desk reading her mail. I don't think things would have gotten that far. I don't think people would have been rushing around with podiums from the House or the Senate. I don't think it would have gone that far. To see people milling around in one of the most important hallways in America, grossly smiling for selfies, group pictures, and unfurling a Trump fag, a Trump flag, was just enough to make me vomit. How did it make you feel? Did you question where you were living? I did. I was like, where is this? I cannot wrap my head around this. And I hope more and more people are filled with disgust and resolve that, okay, you know what? I don't like the outcome of this election, but this is reality. Biden was confirmed president at what, 2 or 3 in the morning. It's going to happen no matter what. No nefarious acts were happening, happened, past tense rather. Get over it. If you're that politically motivated, run on a local level, run on a government level, state level. Make changes, but don't incite riots, cause damage, and create conspiracies that cause no one any benefit. I find it confusing. So I'm very, very happy that the Georgia Senate race worked out in a Democratic favor. So yes, we're going to have Biden as president, and then we're going to have control majority, which is awesome. So thankfully, we don't have to hear from Mitch all that often, I hope. I'm sure he's still going to be a powerful force. And someone who I despise seeing on camera, and even more so hearing every decibel out of his mouth, bothers me. But you know what? Even Mitch was saying how this is un-American, how this is unacceptable, and so on and so on. Thankfully, some common sense from Mitch. And even how he's been breaking away from Trump in the last couple of days. But that's great. I'm so glad that Georgia, especially Kelly, I forgot Kelly's last name, is out. I'm sorry, I'm going to sound very surface, very shallow on this. But to see Kelly, even just yesterday, just to look at her, she's just so annoying to look at with that long hair. I'm like, what? Come on, what are you, 15 years old? Be a professional. Come on, get a haircut. Anyway, Mark Farrell here, Insights the Show, Thursday. We have a great interview coming up. Kristen Kidd momentarily, and she has a lot of insight, and she's been giving a lot to this world on many levels. And I hope you are as well in this new year. And we're filled with promise, I am, and hope, especially with the vaccine not being rolled out as fast and as widely as we'd like, but of change. And I'm really, really a big proponent of change, as you know, listening to the show here and as a motivational speaker, someone who believes in it, someone who makes it happen. We don't need a calendar or a year to pass to make change. It can happen in a second, in a flash, in an hour, in a day's time, in a week's time. But culturally, we're conditioned to wait to a new year, for a new year to begin to start a change. That's not true. A diet, a habit, new job, new relationship, whatever the case may be. And we're going to talk about this after we hear from Kristen Kidd. Kristen Kidd, it is so cool to meet you. We have two very important things in our lives in common, dogs, but more importantly, mental health, because as you write and as I share on stages nationally, that mental health does not discriminate.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It's so true. Yeah.
How did you transition from impacting people's lives on one front to transitioning to becoming a professional photographer and focusing on the connection between homeowners or dog owners and their dogs?
Yeah, so I've been photographing in one capacity or another since I was 15, and have had a deep-rooted love for photography and have photographed professionally for the better part of a decade. So quite a few years were spent with photography and social work in tandem. And it was really when I saw how I could take everything that I loved about being a social worker and integrate that into being a family and pet photographer that, you know, it really took off. And I decided to, after 13 years as being a social worker, to step out of that fully and step fully into my career as a photographer, and being able to lean heavily into the power of us connecting with what matters most in our lives and celebrating that.
Kristen, it's kind of fascinating if you think about it. As a social worker, obviously you're dealing with issues all the time, but they're not so much concrete. They're words or conversations, and they're very, very powerful. But now you put an image to these, and sometimes you can detect and decipher more in an image than can be articulated through words.
Yeah, it is. It's really powerful. One of the things I think that I love most is for every person who comes into the studio to have the opportunity that likely they've never had before to step outside of themselves and to see that love and that bond and that connection and everything that matters most to them come to life through the power of a beautiful photograph. And it's so personally illuminating and so powerful for each person, as it should be.
When and how did you come up with the concept to shoot pictures, a series of pictures for a coffee table book that's going to benefit shelters?
Yeah, so there have been other photographers, and some of them are very good friends of mine, that have done similar projects benefiting rescues and highlighting the bonds of families and pets and the elevation of a pet to the status of a family member, as they should be, and created, you know, tomes and works of art around that. And so inspiration was derived from there. But then I also wanted to lean into the space of kind of the tongue in cheek of man's best friend and turn it on its head and create a series that was about women's bonds with their canine companions and calling it Woman's Best Friend.
And it's funny because just this morning I was watching the news and you kind of popped into my mind on a related but dissimilar note, because the latest baseball team to change their name, the Indians. Mm-hmm. So now when we think of man's best friend, shouldn't it be person's?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes, yes. Yeah, listen, that sounds good to me.
Let's get it done. Let's legislate. So who would have thunk, right? You know, a couple of years ago as a social worker, you know, impacting lives, that you would be publishing your second coffee table book.
Yeah. You know, the entire journey of my life has just been, you know, considering if this is possible, then what else is possible? Mm. So it's all news to me. And at this point, I'm just fully open to seeing what's next.
Absolutely. Now, with all your experience as a social worker, pre-pandemic, of course, who could have thought such a gargantuan health crisis would ever impact us?
Yes.
How have you seen yourself, if you don't mind me asking, mm-hmm. and or the people you photograph or the circle, the world you live in, how it's taking its toll?
How it's taking its toll. So that's interesting. I thought you were going to pivot the question in a direction of, you know, what the gift has been from the experience. Right. For toll. Yeah. I'm jumping the gun.
Down girl, down girl.
It's true. It's true. I do get ahead of myself a lot.
We all do.
Yes. So the definitely the toll has been a general fatigue. There's a lot of feeling that I guess the first sense that pops into my head is treading water, emotionally, relationships, work, you know, being an entrepreneur. All of that is a fatigue, right? Mm. And there's a grief because, you know, the assumptive world has been eviscerated for, you know, everyone in some capacity. And grief is deeply personal, but this is probably one of the only times, I think, certainly in a generation in which everyone is experiencing some level of grief at the same time, because the world that existed before this is not the world that exists now. And there is loss in that. There is a sense of loss, and that is a part of what grief is. And so we're grieving collectively, But grief by its nature feels very isolating. And certainly within a pandemic, that doubles. So I would say that's probably an all-encompassing, overarching yes. umbrella of toll. Mm-hmm.
Yes, well so. Said. And Kristen Kidd, it should be noted that obviously the importance of the vaccine, on a related note, I just got an update. I am paying attention very much to our conversation, but I just got an update because mm-hmm. I get urgent updates from New York Times and other, mm-hmm. since we're in the news business, that the first vaccine was just administered on the soil of the United States.
Oh, wow. That's so exciting.
So it's interesting how we are having this conversation. Mm. Obviously, it's emblematic of something that has to be done in gargantuan fold yes. to have an impact. But I'm going to share with you how my world has radically changed in a positive and indifferent way. One of them is you're going to be leaping for joy over this, is that we have a puppy.
Oh, nice.
Yes, we have a COVID pooch.
Yes.
Yeah, we got one.
There have been so many wonderful things that have come into people's lives during this. So congratulations.
Yes, yes. one of the things you can't get during a pandemic is a bicycle, a pool, and a puppy. And a job. But we managed to, after much digging, because we wanted to give the kids something that would hopefully, in some capacity, replace something that they can't experience, like team sports, being in person with friends that they adore, and all the normalized aspects and rite of passages of life. So we're hoping that my experience as a kid, and as you well know, what a pet can do for the emotional well-being of someone.
Yes, absolutely. I was just thinking yesterday, I'd done a post about connecting. And, you know, there's nothing distinctly wrong in my weekend, but I just felt off. And I couldn't place my finger on what it was. Mm. And I realized that I wasn't connecting. And not just like with another human being, although that was part of it, and I needed to look at that. I wasn't connecting with myself, and I wasn't connecting with other aspects of my life that I love. And it was interesting, though. The one thing that I felt connected to was my dogs, and that's just so powerful. You know, you can have everything else. And that's what I've heard time and time again from these women who've told their stories in this book, is that it was always there. Always.
How do you define a connection with your pet?
For me personally, it's visceral. I seriously will look at a photo of my dogs, if they're not right there with me, and it will just hit my heart in
Fantastic.
Such a profound way. And then I'm a kinesthetic person. And so just even the act of sitting next to them and petting them is tremendously therapeutic.
Wow. Fantastic.
and then it's really hard. It's really hard to feel, to be completely stuck in a negative space when you have this creature who is so good at being present. And
so
they're
true.
Like, hey, there's a ball. Let's go for
yeah.
a walk.
And it requires your immediate attention.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And just takes every day as it is and has wonder and delight. I mean, that as a constant model, as a constant role model, in one's life is just unparalleled.
True, true. It's many things, and including a huge warranted and positive distraction.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, and that has tremendous value. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes that's just what you need.
Kirsten Kidd, absolutely. That along with a good stiff, okay. Because it's never too early to imbibe in 2020.
Yes, apparently.
I want to share with you something I just was reminded of recently when I gave a talk to seniors. This is a new audience for me, but I gave a motivational talk the other day for isolating seniors, even though we were in a room for 500 people. There was only 50 people in the room at a time. And I reminded them of how important it is to do like an internal check. And there is a great Native American proverb that says something, and I'm going to botch the hell out of this, but bear with me. Something that like we are all houses with four rooms, an emotional, a physical, a spiritual, and can't remember the fourth one. And every day we need to go into every room, if only just to air them out. Otherwise, we're not a complete and whole person.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
And then we have to include like a doghouse in that metaphor as well.
Exactly. There should be at least one dog bed in every room.
The Women's Best Friend Project Coffee Table Book, Volume 2. Volume 1 was a huge success. You're looking to increase sales big time. And for what organization?
Brandywine Valley SPCA. We're so excited. We've raised $10,000 for them so far in their amazing work.
That's a lot of kibble.
It is a lot of kibble.
So what's the feedback in terms of you putting out these glorious, very vivid, almost surreal photos? You almost feel like you're intruding on people's privacy because they are so genuinely right there. You can almost feel people breathing and a dog panting. And tagging that along with the mental health capacity, what's the initial feedback?
I think the overarching, you know, what I've been getting back is a powerful sense of connection, you know, kind of to circle back to what we were saying before, connection not only with their dog, but validation and affirmation of the power of our bonds with our canine companions. So there's still some stigma about elevating pets to the space of family members. And so creating a space in which that's celebrated and normalizing that through this topic then helps eradicate the stigma. As with all of the stories, there's a lot of stigmas that are represented in the book. And part of our goal is to eradicate stigmas by normalizing the human experience through conversations. And that's one of the biggest elements of what we do through the book, in addition to raising funds. And I think that the resonance of that is what comes across and what, you know, reverberates in the hearts and minds of every person who has read this book. They know that they're not alone.
And Kristen Kidd, I immediately felt that when I was perusing through the pages, and well executed, because it's one thing to be able to have the conceptual imagery in your mind and how to execute something, but it's one thing to do that and to actually have it come to fruition and have it be successful. And relating to a point you just made before in terms of stigma, I mean, there's many things we've experienced this year, and stigma on so many levels, I never was aware that are still so omnipresent in this country. And hopefully, whether it's the viewer, the lens of pet ownership or race, sexual identity, orientation, race, political facet, ideology, whatever the case is, I hope we can seriously grow and fast.
Yeah. You know, and I think that everyone has the capacity to elevate the conversation in their own way. And I mean, and that's the thing that creates the momentum and the speed, is creating, again, spaces in which we celebrate the myriad of ways to have the human experience and to, you know, and the more that we do that, the more that will become the norm. And we all can do that. We all have some way that we can contribute to that conversation.
Yes, we have the capability. It's whether we want to allow ourselves to, I believe.
Yeah, that's interesting that you use the word allow. I was just in my post this morning, I was saying that today was about allowing. So it's funny that you brought that up.
Let's talk about Jenny. You talk about Jenny in one of your stories about who's bipolar and how this changed her life, having a pet.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You know, and the photo series from her story, so much fun, you know, and I think that that particular story lends itself to a conversation about how difficult it is to remain within a space, a negative space, when you have this creature in your life that is constantly thrusting joy in your direction.
True. And not to take it personal and think it's only you and what is wrong with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that there's space for all the feelings. And so, you know, it's not diminishing or excluding any of the feelings that that come along with any part of the human experience. It's a yes and situation where you feel the feels, you feel all the feels. And also there is this creature that's here for you to elevate your experience in life and to help you navigate that and to hang in there and be intuitive enough to see when you just need something stable to be present with you and not say a word, or when you need something to enter your life to cause a shift. And our canine companions are amazing at being intuitive in that way.
Or a good lick.
Yes. Yes.
Kristen Kidd is my guest. She's a photographer, former social worker, and her new book is called The Women's Best Friend Project, Coffee Table Book, Volume 2. The website you should check out is womensbestfriendproject.com. womensbestfriendproject.com. That's WOMANS project.com. Mm-hmm. So have you actually witnessed with it yourself or someone remotely close to your family or friends, just the absolute power a pet can have on changing mental health?
Yeah. I mean, I think you mean in my personal life.
Correct.
Yeah, there's just a couple things that pop into my mind, even just something as simple as my childhood dog, Cedric, the Basset Hound.
Love the name.
Cedric. Yeah, he was a refined creature.
Sounds really very regal.
but he was my best buddy. And and I think that there was a tremendous amount of power in the joy I felt as a child having him in my life. And I, you know, I think that in itself is noteworthy.
Sure.
And you know, and I think one of the amazing things about dogs is that each pet holds a unique space in our hearts. Like they represent something specific. And so Cedric was like my childhood buddy, my best buddy. And then in adulthood, Penny was my first dog and she was like my ride or die. And, and we just did everything together. And she was like, you know, she was like my adult bestie. She was 8 pounds. She had a mohawk. We were just like, let's just go, you know, kind of thing.
That's great.
And sure. She could just hang. She could just hang with all of life. And she was just a joy. And then my dogs that I have now, Hudson and Nito, you know, they're the closest thing to children, you know, that I'll ever have. And they completely melt my heart every day.
Aww.
And so, you know, each of them holds a completely different space and representation in my life. And I think that also is tremendously powerful.
Yes. And I think that exemplifies how whoever is a pet owner in whatever stage and age of life they're in, mm-hmm. the positive impacts. When you're talking about being a child, and I see it in my kids, I can see their sense of responsibility and maturity mm-hmm. because they only have, okay, this is a very, very embellished statement, but it's almost like they're parent-like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they realized, yes, of course, mom and dad are here to take care of the dog. But we said, yes, we would be pivotal in raising the dog. But it seems like they have more of a sense of ownership and responsibility, which is a great thing for a child who's 11 or 8 to learn.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it makes sense too. Like, where else would you get that first sense, a healthy first sense of responsibility to that level? There is another living being that is your responsibility as a child, right? Yes. And so you have that flexibility of, you know, it's not, you're not, the buck doesn't stop with the child, right? Like the child is like, right? But they have the most sense of ownership and duty that they've probably ever had.
Oh, absolutely. Even just the other day with our first emergency drill with our dog, because I'm downstairs recording, it's just like we are right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone knows in the family not to interrupt dad when the recording light's on. But this was an emergency situation where we almost had to call New Jersey Natural Gas because, guess what? Fido was out on a deck and chewed through the natural gas line feeding the gas grill.
Amazing.
So wafting in the air was, yes, you guessed it. So we almost had a major calamity. Go fetch. So times like that, you know, I scratch my head and say, why? I want to be a good father. I want to be a good parent, but do I need to be a good pet owner? And the answer is yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're a family member too.
Exactly. Exactly. To be 1000% crystal clear, I was not on board initially, and then I'm totally not on board, but I have to be on board because of my kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
What it's doing for them.
Yeah. And it's wonderful that you could come to that place to experience that and experience that joy through them. And I think too, you know, we should have a follow-up conversation in a year or two, because I cannot tell you the conversations I've had with families where the person who was just not down the clown,
I can
then,
see where you're
then
going.
Becomes
sleeping with
inseparable,
them.
Inseparable. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Inseparable.
Oh, I can see it. Well, the one thing I truly, truly like doing with Miles, we call him Miles because we got him from Alabama, is playing Frisbee. He's got this statuesque physique that just like mimics like a greyhound or something. Mm-hmm. And he is crazy fast, and he catches Frisbee. I can throw a Frisbee like almost 50 yards, and he will get there and catch it midair. Just perplexing. I love it.
Yeah.
Especially being an athlete, so we can do those things together. Otherwise, he drives me nuts. Okay, onward and forward. So you travel to many, many places in people's minds, hearts, and eyes, and also physicality. Honduras, to provide portraits to families. Great for you, and tell us about that.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, the Honduras Portrait Project. So near and dear to my heart. And it's breaking my heart that I haven't been able to get down. I was supposed to go down again this year, but COVID has hit Honduras so hard. But the project itself, I travel to remote villages in Honduras where there is no photographic footprint whatsoever. There's no photos of grandma. There's no family photos. There's no snapshots of kids, which is almost like, if we think about that in our lives, like we think about that ourselves, it's almost unfathomable. It is so ubiquitous that there is some photo of some family member throughout.
It's taken for granted
years.
Here.
It really is. And it starts an interesting conversation about socioeconomic disparity and how we view it and what we take for granted. And then, you know, on a more fundamental level, just being able to travel to these towns, which may have like 40 or 50 people in a mountainous area of Honduras, and just show up and create a photograph right there on the spot that creates a photographic imprint. There's a tremendous sense of pride and joy that comes with that.
So Kristen, that was my follow-up question, because obviously to take a picture and to turn the camera around for them to see a digital image is amazing, but you are able to actually produce a physical picture on the spot?
I can, wow. And I do. So it has to be small. I mean, there probably are battery operated ones that are larger, but for my setup, I traveled to Honduras. I actually go with an amazing organization called Healthy Niños, and they're actually there to help end malnutrition, because that is a huge problem down there. So they're there to help end malnutrition. I've volunteered for them, and I've done photojournalism for them. And then finally I had this idea for this project, and they said, yes, that sounds awesome. That would be wonderful. And so now they just let me accompany them down there, and then I just do my thing. And my entire setup is in one rolly bag, which is just a printer and paper. And I print 5x7s, and there's a mat, and I mat it in a 5x7, and then I spray coat it in like a UV water resistant spray so that it can have a little bit more
longevity.
Yeah. And then that's what they receive. And I just set it up as an operation, and they know that, you know, I'm going to be coming into town, and they grab their family members, and they hop in, and we take
gleaming
a photo,
and smile after smile. That is fantastic. You're warming people's souls and creating a legacy that people can actually share.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, you know, what's really interesting is that if you look back at the origin of photography and the original family portrait in like the early 20th century, late 19th century, no one's smiling, right? Like if
stoic.
You look at very stoic, because that was it. That was the first time. It was maybe the only time in history that your family was going to get this photo. And it was a very formal, very important thing. And so that meant that you didn't smile. You were just very stoic, as you said. And so it's interesting, because when I go down, I actually see that a lot. And, you know, because it's such an important moment for them, they're not all smiles and giggles. They're very stoic, because this is the only representation of them as a family. And so it's only become as we've taken photography for granted, and we're able to have snapshot after snapshot and whatever, that we get, you know, more jovial and more lighthearted about it. So I thought that was a very interesting aspect of the work as well.
Stupendous. Kristen Kidd, that is just amazing. Fantastic endeavor and work. Women'sBestFriendProject.com, WomensBestFriendProject.com. For the coffee book, it's available on that website. The coffee book is the Women's Best Friend Project Coffee Table Book, Volume 2. Now, I'm sure you'd like to have to not ever create another book like this, because everything would happily not be needed and necessary, and everyone would be mentally healthy, but that's not a reality. So I wish you all the best and all you're doing, your flourishing work, your entrepreneurialism that's really positively impacting people on many aspects and levels. And that's just fantastic.
Yeah, it's such a joy, you know, every day to help people connect and create a shift within their own world and to see themselves in their best light.
Because I imagine you're not being invited into people's homes to photograph their families, including their pet, because they're not happy. People want to share and to capture moments, and whether it's missing teeth, the way the dog looks at their son or daughter or husband or wife or spouse or significant other, that's just, you know, amazing right there, that people want to garner that love and capacity to be however big or small that unit is.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, oftentimes we get so caught up in the world as it is, you know, swirling around us, that we just need an anchor to remind us of why we work so hard and what matters most. And so, you know, having a photographic experience that creates that is powerful and important.
Absolutely. WomensBestFriendProject.com. Kristen Kidd, keep up the great work.
Thank you.
And my dog stories saga, rather, continue just the other day on the deck of my house. My dog went onto a bar level. It's like counter height that I made. And on the other side of the bar counter on the deck is the grass. And it's probably about 7 feet, 7 foot drop into the grass. And now my dog is jumping onto the bar counter and then leaping from the bar counter off the deck onto the grass, which is a good 7 foot fall. And he's been doing it consistently. So I don't know how this is going to play out with us in the Farrell household, but we'll see. Anyway, I hope 21 is working out for you so far. It's still very surreal, even after all this time from March, that the pandemic is here. It's omnipresent and getting worse. Apparently, the first European different strain was detected in someone in New York State not that long ago, I think 2 or 3 days ago. So it's definitely here stateside. Hopefully, with the other pharmaceutical companies still ramping up their research and going for emergency FDA approval, that we'll be able to get more vaccines and effective vaccines on the market. That's what I'm really hoping for, as you are, because this is a very, very difficult way to live. Certainly, we appreciate what we have, but of course, we're accustomed to way, way more in life. And why not? Especially isolating seniors, people with pre-existing conditions. The dangerous aspects for them are just incalculable. So we want them to get the shots. We want them to live, be able to experience life as we all do, and not have to be stuck under a mask. And believe me, that's not the worst thing in the world. And I think many of us will continue to wear a mask even after the vaccinations have been around and proven fairly effective, just to err on the side of caution. And that's fine. I'm totally cool and down with that, especially my kids. My kids are very cool. They're 11 and 8, and they're really, really into being safe, like totally into it, like way more than me and my wife. And my wife and I are very serious about it. But they're just like, no, like, don't do that, Dad. I'm like, it's okay. I'm washing my hands, and no, don't do that, Dad. So I hope everyone in your life that's in your close family circle is very, very careful in practicing a safe COVID practices, for lack of a better term. But it's the reality. But in terms of changing for the new year, you know, what are you expecting out of this new year? What do you want? I remember speaking to someone a couple weeks ago, and they're like, oh, man, I didn't accomplish nearly what I wanted to last year. I said, you have accomplished way more than you can ever imagine. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, you're here. Don't you get it? Like, that's the finish line, man, for that year. That's a major accomplishment. That's a goal of like all like crazy levels. Who would have expected that something like this would have descended on the globe, on Earth? And here we are. So don't fret about not, you know, getting your resume up to speed or getting a new job, getting out of a relationship, whatever the case may be. The fact is that you survived in 20 is huge. Okay, so for 21, do you want to tackle more of those goals? Are they more attainable? Possibly, but depends on what those goals are. But there's, I guess, I can't say people getting accustomed to it, but I guess to a certain degree that we are getting accustomed to it. So with that said, maybe more of those goals can be tackled. So if you're wanting to lose weight and you're saying, oh, the gyms are closed. Yes, and most of the gyms are closed. But I've been saying this since, I don't know, the dawn of time for myself, that you don't need a gym. Here's the deal, guys. If you want to lose weight and be fit, 80% of it, 80%, is what you put in your mouth. 80%. I would tell that to all my spin classes. I would see people come in month after month, year after year, and not getting fitter. There was a certain caliber. And then other people were like, were fit or remained fit or got even more fit. But there's a certain bunch of people that never got fitter, not thinner. Maybe cardiovascular, they were fitter, their stronger heart. But in terms of the weight loss, 80% of it is what you put in your body. And so also, if you're working out really, really hard, and you are fit and you look fit, but you're not getting those goals, you're not reaching the actual look that you want, It's because of your diet. And listen, I am not anyone to say that you shouldn't cheat and you shouldn't live, because I am totally there. I drink wine, I drink beer, I have chocolate morsels out of the bag late at night, because that's like a weird, sweet, like go-to happy little treat I have. And I'm cool about it. I burn it off. I eat well. I eat healthy. But I also live in moderation, because I know somebody who's eating croissants every day for breakfast. And you can't eat croissants, chocolate croissants, every day for breakfast, because it's going to take its toll. Absolutely going to take its toll. So just being mindful of what you put in your mouth, I'm telling you, you're going to be so much more pleased with the results. Again, and of course you can live, and just take care of yourself. Just move. It's different. Our lives, we're less mobile nowadays, but that doesn't mean they can't go outside, can't wear a mask, can't ride a bike, can't walk a mile, get a treadmill. If you can't get a treadmill, there's so many different ways. Push-ups, squats, wall squats, static stretching, being flexible, remaining flexible, mind and body, doing things online. Peloton, you can't afford Peloton, no need to sweat. There are so many free apps online. You can do yoga free, you can stretch, you can do weights, you can use cans, you can use bottles. There are so many different ways for you to be fitter and more healthy and feel strong. When you feel fit and strong, you feel more mentally, your acumen is more on, you just feel more confident. There's so many different ways that we'll get through 21 together, I promise you. And if you ever have any questions on whether it's working out, business, or anything in life that you're trying to attain, and I can help out, I'm more than happy to. Just email me, mark@markfarrellmotivation.com, mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. Well, I hope you enjoyed our show today. I really hope we get past this very odd, difficult, scary, and tumultuous era. And when Biden is sworn in 2 weeks, I hope to see slowly starts to change. Hope it rapidly starts to change, but I'll take slow. I hope it slowly starts to change so we can have some forward momentum, some positivity, some sea changes in the right direction, so people can see when the wake of Donald Trump is hopefully past us and his righteous followers start disintegrating and wallowing and become a distant memory. I hope that's what happens, that they can see, oh, okay, maybe things weren't as bad or as real as presented. And maybe, okay, I can resume being just a Republican instead of a far, far crazy right nutball. Hey, Gary Nell's next. He's got an incredible show for you. As always, Mark Farrell always loves spending time with you every Thursday. Again, feel free to email me any questions, comments, mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. Have a great day, and I'll catch you soon.
Insight with Mark Farrell. Check out this and all Insight shows on the Insight page at PRN.FM. PRN.FM. Have Mark speak at your company, your kid's school or college. Mark speaks on critical topics that affect kids and adults everywhere, from anti-bullying, mental health, drugs, and alcohol to overcoming adversity. Visit MarkFarrellMotivation.com for more info. Insight, Thursday mornings at 11 on the Progressive Radio Network.